Well, good morning once again.
I'm going to apologize in advance. I've been under the weather all week, and my voice is still hit or miss. So if I get into a coughing fit, just I'll turn my mic off and bear with me, and we'll come back as soon as I'm able. New year. A new year, it's so fun. We get to make changes. We get to hopefully see some differences in our life. I am not a person who loves the whole New Year resolution. You might be like, New Year resolution, I'm all for it. You might be, I hate New Year's resolutions. The reasons I don't care for New Year's resolutions per se is primarily because I often fail at them. You know, I'll start and I'll say, hey, I'm going to do this. And usually by like the 4th or 5th of January, which is today, things have taken a downhill spiral and things aren't going well. I don't know if any of you are sore today. I am sore because even though I don't believe in New Year's resolutions, I still do start new things at the beginning of a year. And I did way too many squats 2 days ago. And Tyler, you've got a pick on the floor and I'm not picking it up for you. Like when you come back up, you can get it, because if I go down, I don't know if I'm going to get back up again. But New Year's resolutions aren't so much my thing, but I do love a new year because I believe it's such an opportunity for new perspective. I think it's an opportunity for us to begin with a new posture, to look at what God is doing and to posture ourselves to receive whatever that is. There is something significant for me about turning the page on the calendar and asking myself these questions, like, how am I going to posture myself this year? What position am I going to take? What is my perspective that I'm going to have looking into this new year? Because the reality is that my posture will prepare and position me for what God is going to do in my life this year. And as I've been thinking about this in the last couple of weeks and even speaking to Tyler, we were drawn to a passage in the book of Ezra, chapter 3. And that's where we're going to be at today. If you have your Bibles, you can actually turn to Ezra 3. The book of Ezra is the account of God's people who are returning to Jerusalem after spending 70 years in captivity in Babylon. For 70 years, they were a captive people in Babylon, and the book of Ezra starts right after the people were able to return. What we're told in the word is that God moved on the ruling king's heart to release the captives. He said to them, you can go back to your home, go back to Jerusalem. He even provided a way for them to do that. And he said, the purpose of this is so that you can go and rebuild your temple, the temple that was destroyed 70 years prior. And so God's people do. They return. They leave captivity. They go back to their home. And when they arrive, what they see is complete ruin and destruction. Everything that once was is gone. Nothing looks the same. Nothing looks good. For the older generation, they would have probably been in their 80s at this point in time. And coming back, all they see is destruction of what once was. They remember a time when it looked good. They remember a time when it was splendid. They remember a time when it was flourishing. And now they come and they're like, we don't recognize this. It's not what we remember. And for the younger generation who were born in captivity, they come into Jerusalem. They've never even seen this place. They've heard stories, but they've never seen it with their own eyes. It's all new, but it's all in ruins. And so in Ezra 3, we're told that the first thing that the people do when they arrive in Jerusalem is they rebuild the altar to God. Now, I find this very interesting because they don't take the time to go and settle in their homes and to get comfortable and to get settled and to rebuild all of that and to make things look perfect and I'm going to just be in my little home, be in my comfortable corner. No, what they do together in unity is they go to the place where the temple was and they rebuild the altar to God. The altar was the place where they would worship. It was the place where they would gather around and they would sacrifice. They would celebrate the festivals. They would come together. They would raise their voices. They would pray to their God. And they come together as one and they say, this is the first thing that we're going to do. We're going to rebuild our place of worship. We're going to set our hearts in the right place before God as we enter into this new season. And this was before anything else was done. The walls to the city of Jerusalem were broken down. They hadn't been rebuilt. Everything was in ruin. Their own homes were mostly in ruin. And yet they begin with this beautiful posture of worship. In their new beginning, they postured themselves to set God first. To set his name first, his glory and his way. What I love about this is that worship began while everything else was still unfinished. Worship began while everything else wasn't even started yet. They worshiped in the midst of ruin. Think about that for a moment. They worshiped in the midst of ruins. They worshiped in the midst of chaos. Imagine going into a city, your home is in ruin. The temple isn't there. There's no walls to protect you from the enemies that are surrounding you. And yet they worshiped in the midst of chaos. They worshiped in the midst of fear. As I said, there were enemies around, and it actually says in the word of God in Ezra 3 that they were afraid, and yet they rebuilt the altar, and yet they worshiped. Worship in the midst of great loss, looking and seeing this isn't what we remember, this isn't what we were told about, and yet we will posture ourselves to worship. And worship in the midst of the unknown. I wonder if any of these scenarios resonate with you this morning. The worship in the midst of whatever it is, ruin, in the midst of fear, in the midst of the unknown. What are you worshiping in the midst of today? What is your posture? Because what I see from this account in Ezra is that God is at work in the midst of it all, even when things look incomplete, even when things look unfinished or perhaps a little unsettled or uncertain. The people postured themselves to worship first. And I think as we enter into a new year, we can learn from that, that our posture first is that of worship. God was working then. And God is working now. And our posture, your posture and my posture as we enter this new year positions us for what God is going to do, for the work that he is doing. You know, if we wait for everything to be finished, because we like to do this sometimes, right? We like to wait for everything to be perfect, for everything to be settled, for everything to be known. But if we wait for everything to be perfect before we worship or trust, we might miss what God is wanting to do in the middle, in the midst of. It's that peace that passes all understanding that guards our hearts in the midst of the trouble or the chaos or the unknown. Coming with a posture of worship so that we don't miss what God is doing in those in-between moments. God is at work. He's working with the people of Israel as they return, as they rebuild the altar. But what we're going to see next is that people can respond to the same work of God in very different ways. In Ezra chapter 3, verses 10 to 13, I'm going to read it to you this morning from the New Living Translation, if I can. From verse 10. Says, when the builders completed the foundation of the Lord's temple, the priests put on their robes and took their places to blow their trumpets. And the Levites, descendants of Asaph, clashed their cymbals to praise the Lord, just as King David had prescribed. With praise and thanks, they sang this song to the Lord. He is good. His faithful love for Israel endures forever. Then all the people gave a great shout, praising the Lord because the foundation of the Lord's temple had been laid. Listen to this. But many of the older priests, Levites, and other leaders who had seen the first temple wept aloud when they saw the new temple's foundation. The others, however, were shouting for joy. The joyful shouting and the weeping mingled together in a loud noise that could be heard far in the distance. What's happened here is that now there's been this move from the building of the altar, the reestablishment of worship in the holy city, celebrating the festivals, offering sacrifices, having a proper order and a proper heart of worship. And next they moved to the rebuilding phase. We're going to now rebuild the temple. And they start with laying stones for the foundation of the temple. And as the foundation was completed, we read that the younger generation rejoiced. They praised God loudly because they are seeing God is doing something new. He's doing something great. Look at this incredible foundation. This is going to be the place of worship. They praised God loudly. They lifted their voices. They sang. They clashed cymbals together. They played instruments. They basically had this incredible praise party for all that God was doing. They were excited for the future. They saw the work and they rejoiced. I remember a time when we were living in Botswana. We were missionaries there. I've shown this picture before at church. I don't have it this morning. But we were building the church. We were meeting in like a big carnival tent, and we began to just lay a brick foundation, if you will, because our church was in the sand. We actually built a church on the sand, you know, unlike what the Bible tells you to do. But we lived in the Kalahari Desert, so there's a lot of sand there. But we're like, we're going to build a stone foundation. And when we looked at it, we rejoiced. Look at what God is doing. And all it was were these simple bricks that my little kids, when they were like 3 and 2, were putting on the sand. For us, it looked magnificent because look at what God is doing. To an expert builder who's built skyscrapers, if they would have come in, they probably would have wept aloud. What is this thing that you're calling a foundation? Right? But these people, the people of Israel, the young ones, when they saw the foundation laid, they rejoiced. They praised God because they knew he was doing something new and it was going to be good. But the older generation wept. They mourned and they grieved what was lost. They would have been children, perhaps young teens, when they were taken into captivity. But they had seen the former temple. They had seen its splendor. They had seen the beauty of it. And now they come back and it's gone. It's destroyed. And they see this very simple foundation laid. It's far less spectacular. It's not what it was, and it's certainly not what they remember, and they mourned. What's beautiful to me about this passage is that both mourning and rejoicing were heard together. There was space for both in this moment, in this new thing that God was doing. The mourning or the grieving was not a failure of faith. God made room for their grief. Their feelings were real. They were legitimate. We lost something that was magnificent. And God made space for them to be able to grieve in that moment. It was actually healthy for them to recognize what they lost and to also know the future is going to look different now. But also that grieving was done in tandem with rejoicing, with praise. It's this beautiful picture, I believe, of God's church. that we are to rejoice with those who rejoice. We are to mourn with those who mourn. That's what we're told in Romans 12:15. Or in Ecclesiastes 3:4, that there is a time for everything. There is a time for rejoicing. There is a time for mourning. See, both of these groups, the old generation that had seen the former temple and the young generation that was just seeing all things new, responded honestly. And in that honesty, that posture shaped how they experienced that moment. Because posture positions us for what God is doing. Now, some of us here in this room step into this new year carrying a lot of grief. I don't believe that God is asking you in 2026 to pretend that the grief isn't there. But I believe that what he shows here is that we can hold grief and joy at the same time. That joy that is deep down. And yes, sometimes we've got to dig down to that foundation and say, Jesus, would you let that joy bubble up while we're still holding grief for a time and mourning for a time, recognizing what was, but believing that God is doing something new. We can walk through grief and we can posture ourselves to expect that God is still working. And that he is good. He has plans. Because what God does is he invites us forward with him. So what is your posture as you enter this new year? Because your posture positions you for what God is going to do. The question is not, what are your resolutions? Because resolutions, they're going to come and they're going to go and they're going to fail. And you're going to be sore. And it's okay. But what is your posture? From Ezra, we see a few different postures that I want to focus on today. The first is a posture of expectant faith. See, expectant faith believes that God is active, that he is working before outcomes are visible. He is at work right now in the midst of. He is doing something new, and we might not see the completed picture. We might only see the one stone that he's asking us to move, but God is working. It's that faith that worships in the midst of the unknown. It's the faith that worships in the midst of the chaos. It's the faith that says, in this new year, in 2026, I know that God is going to do a new work in me. I know it. And so I'm positioning myself to receive that new work and to step into it. I'm going to receive what he's doing and I'm going to step into it. Just like the people of Israel saw God move on the heart of their king that held them in captivity to send them home. God moved. God did a work that only he could do. The king said, you're free to go. The people could have just received that and been like, man, that's great. And stayed in captivity. But they didn't. They received what God did and then they walked home. They took steps toward the purpose that God had for them. Can we see and trust that God is doing a work, and then step into it? Because that is what a posture of expectant faith is. After a posture of expectant faith, I believe we see a posture of participation. And this is from Ezra 3:8-9. This is when the people started to pick up the bricks and lay the foundation stones. See, God moved, he made a way for his people, he provided. Those were all the things that God did, but the people were still the ones to do the work of laying the stones. They participated. I read something last week in talking about New Year's resolutions that essentially said you can't expect to be changed in the new year if you're not willing to do the work, right? You can't just expect, hey, it's 2026, I'm going to lose 50 pounds and not do anything, right? Like if you want to see change, you actually have to do something. And that's when the soreness comes in, right? And even in our spiritual walk, sometimes it's working some spiritual muscles that haven't been worked in quite some time, right? Are we willing to get to work? Are we willing to participate? We expect that God will move. We know that he is working, but he also is inviting us to be active participants, not lazy bystanders. He's saying, I've got something new. Come and join me. Pick up a brick. Let's lay the foundation. Think about that for a moment. You partner with what God is doing in you and through you. What a privilege. What a beautiful invitation. The posture of participation takes intention. It takes saying, this is what I'm going to do. It takes asking God even, what do you have for me now? What do you have for me in this new year? What is it that is the first step? Where's that first brick that you want me to lay? And then when we hear it and we receive it, we actively do it. That is our posture of participation. Expectation without participation will never lead to lasting transformation. We are meant to be active participants. God is working, but our posture determines whether we participate in what it is that he's doing. The next posture is that of humble obedience. Being obedient even when things maybe don't look the way we expected them to. In Zechariah chapter 4, verse 10, the prophet says, do not despise these small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin. Do you know what he's referencing? He's referencing the laying of the foundation in Ezra. He says, don't despise the small beginnings. God delights in them. God doesn't expect perfection in a day, and neither should we. I believe that God expects us to be a little bit sore as we posture ourselves to begin the work in partnership with him to see the change that he's bringing. Are you beginning small, little small steps? I'm going to read my Bible more every day. I'm going to spend more time in prayer. I'm going to worship with full abandon. Are you beginning with perhaps some ways that are small? In your eyes, God does not despise those small things. He's like, good, let's go, start there. I've got more for you. Small obedience may not feel impressive in the moment, but that posture positions you for what God is doing. And then finally, it's a posture of worship in the midst of whatever else is happening. A posture of worship. Worship happened before the foundation was even laid at the temple. They built that altar first. Worship for us is meant to be a daily posture, not just a once a week when we gather here on a Sunday morning, but in each and every day, I am here, Jesus. I praise you. I worship you. You don't have to sing. Just lift your voice. Say, God, I thank you for this new day, for this new beginning, for this great thing that you are doing. A posture of worship in the midst of whatever life throws at you. Worship first. Worship in the midst of the pain, the chaos, the uncertainty, the unknown. Worship while you wait. Posture positions us for what God is doing even before we see the completed picture. Worship team, would you come? We have a posture of expectant faith, believing that God is doing a work and that it is good. A posture of participation where we are invited in to what it is that he is doing. A posture of humble obedience to keep going even when perhaps it looks like a small step or a small beginning. And a posture of worship in the midst of everything that life will throw at us. So church, what is your posture as you enter this new year? What is your posture for 2026? And as you think about that, I want to read to you a passage from Lamentations chapter 3. This is verses 22 and 23. Yet I still dare to hope when I remember this. The faithful love of the Lord never ends. His mercies never cease. Great is his faithfulness. His mercies begin afresh each morning. Church, God's mercies are new each morning. Every morning, every time when you turn the page on the calendar, every morning when your feet hit the floor, when you get out of bed, his mercies are new. He has something new for you today and each day of this year, because he is a faithful God and he is at work. So would you posture yourselves for what God is doing this year? God has done good before, and he will do it again. Our God is not done. He's not like 2025, okay, I'm out. He is here, and he's working, and he's going to continue to work, continue to do it again and again and again to show himself faithful, and he invites us in. Would you be an active participant with me? Let's work together to see all things new in 2026. Church, would you stand? We're going to worship together.